It's hard putting your head down and going to work and grinding through it and going, okay, I got to feed my family. What steps do I have to take to make sure that works? And then as you grow, now I've got to feed my family and her family and his family and their families. So you have to put your head down and grind and go through it. And it takes a load, right? It's a lot of stress, requires a commitment from you to do that. Hey everyone, welcome to Business Aspirin. I'm your host, Clint Janelle, and today I have with me Ben McDonald, and Ben is with Stop Restoration out of Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Ben, how are you, my friend?
Great. Thanks for having me, Clint.
Absolutely. Excited to have you on. Chat a little bit about your world and what you guys are doing and how you got into the space. So let's talk a little bit about how you got started initially, even into entrepreneurship journey and the restoration side.
Okay. I was terrified. I think would probably be a good accurate statement. I was in corporate America with a really good company and just didn't feel like I fit, didn't get a lot of satisfaction from my job. I made decent money, long hours, didn't really enjoy it, and didn't really see a lot of path forward. So I started looking at what I could get into, and I've always enjoyed the construction industry. So I started looking at different businesses in that realm, and I had never run a company on my own before. So I looked into franchises and we found Service Team. And they were, at the time, they were really set up like a business consultant. That's basically what we were getting into. And that seemed like a good fit for what I didn't know. So we jumped in and we've been 11 years going strong and really enjoying the journey so far.
Yeah. So 11 years. So when you first started looking at franchises, was it specifically in restoration? How did you decide on, or were you looking at a Subway too and like whatever else?
No, we looked at telecom, we looked at restoration, we looked at painting. There were probably five or six different franchises that we looked into, and a couple different restoration ones. Once I learned that that didn't mean like working on just an old house, because that's what I thought it was when they first brought it up. Sure. But my career path up to that point, you know, I'd worked summers in maintenance or construction. I've done construction. My dad did a lot of construction when I was little. I would help him, you know, just as little kids do. And I'd always wanted to be a contractor. That was kind of always what I wanted to do. I just never quite had the guts to jump out and do it. And, you know, I had at the time a young family, and, you know, my kids are smart, but they're not athletic. So college was going to be expensive. And I thought, you know, I need to make more money. I need to do something. So we started looking at different options. And that's really where we got into. I need to get in a business of my own. And we started it about right when my oldest son was hitting high school. We thought about 4 years was enough to ramp up to where we would cash flow college. And that's kind of how it's been for all three boys.
Awesome. Well, that's, I love that statement. I'm going to have to try to steal that at some point. Hey, they're not going to be athletics, so they're going to have to, college is going to be expensive. That's pretty great. So you had some history in terms of construction and other things that led you to go, okay, when I'm looking at these franchise models, restoration seems to be one that might be a pretty decent fit. Mm-hmm. And so then you started vetting out different restoration opportunities. And the reason we want to talk about this is because there are guys out there that are technicians somewhere or just trying to figure out what they want to do. They're also, like you said, not satisfied. And they're trying to go, okay, what can I do? So you weren't in the restoration space at all when you decided to pull the trigger on one. So let's talk about the process of making that full decision and navigating the process of, okay, restoration is the one I want because I'm used to the construction. I want to be able to help people, and ultimately picking Service Team of professionals as an option.
We didn't look at a lot of restoration franchises. We looked at a couple in this area, and the territories didn't have a lot of availability. There were some, but there wasn't a lot, and it wasn't right here. Service Team had an opening right where I wanted to be. So that was part of it. And then a big factor for us was, I was just scared. I was afraid of what I didn't know that I didn't know. And I didn't want to do something with, you know, my family's future that was a dumb decision that I just didn't know about. So that's really why we went the franchise route. I didn't realize how many consultants there are in the world and all the different people that are out there that could have helped us get off the ground and get going without buying into a franchise system. So, you know, without having that knowledge or that experience, you know, I thought, well, I need some kind of safety net or some sort of guidance. And that was the route we chose. If I had it to do over again, I'd hire a consultant and just go out on my own. I think that's probably a much cheaper route to do it. And I'm not sure you'd get a whole lot worse results than what we did. Now, I won't for a second say that they didn't help me get off the ground, because the franchise was fantastic when we started. But if I had it to do over again, I would find a really good consultant, and I would spend a lot more time interviewing them and go out on a long, you know, out on my own with whatever consultant I felt could really help us in my weaknesses.
And I think that's a great point, because the reality is, I think you're right. Maybe up front, it might be a little bit cheaper to go on the franchise route, but long term, it's probably not, other than hiring a consultant. I don't really know how that vets out, but I think it's a valid point that you bring up, that is, okay, well, I could do it this way. I don't know much about the restoration space. So for those that are looking to jump into something, there are probably, especially in today's world, social media and online, there's so many online coaching and consulting programs that are available that can help you navigate. So if you're trying to get an HVAC or plumbing or electrical, there's some business consultant out there that can help you understand some of the pitfalls. And we've even, in the restoration space, we've got access to a bunch of those guys here at Business Aspirin. So we can certainly point you in the right direction to get you connected with some of these guys.
Right.
But I appreciate that, because you're right. The franchise model offers a level of understanding that you don't have on your own. And so you go, okay, well, they've got this package, and I open this box and I take this flyer out and I'm like, okay, this is what I need to do this. And you follow those steps. So what is something that you wish, I mean, besides, you know, the number of consultants in our market, what is something that you wish you had known prior to making that decision then?
I really wish I had known how simple it can be to run a business. It's not all this magic that I had in my head, like, oh my gosh, you got to be a business guru. You have to have sales acumen out the wazoo. You got to be connected with 1,000 different people in every industry to get your business off the ground. And in reality, you don't need that. It's not that hard to get up and going. And your consultants, or, you know, the big pitfalls are the things that are going to put you out of business right away. And if you can avoid those things and just do the little stuff right, you can build a thriving little business, and you can grow from that. And it doesn't take much to build that foundation. And that's what I wish I understood early on. I just had built it up to so much more than running a business really is. I mean, it can be difficult. Sure, it can be stressful, and you can have those sleepless nights. But it can also be really great to know that I get to choose. It's my choice how this happens, or what we do, what we don't do. And if this customer's really, really happy, you know, that makes me feel great. And if they're unhappy, what can I do to fix it? And, you know, some people you can't make happy, and then walking away. And that's kind of a fun decision to learn when to do that too. So I think the simplicity of it is what I wish I had understood before starting.
Yeah. I think, you know, when you say that, 11 years ago, you didn't have access to the tools that are available even today. Like, truthfully, the idea of regulation and compliance and all those things, and what do I have to have, and how do I get a business license, and how do I file with the Secretary of State, and oh my God, I need an accountant, and now I got to get my own bookkeeping software. And a lot of that seems very daunting. I agree. And it's really not that hard, because you can navigate a bunch of that as you go, for sure.
Right.
But I would think even today, the AI tools that are available, type in something to ChatGPT and be like, listen, I want to start a business in X. I am in this state. I want to make sure that I follow all the and probably get someone to spit out a business plan for you that would be pretty spot on in regard to, this is how you at least get started. It may not make you rich, but it's probably going to give you the tools that you need to navigate that. So I think you're probably right, though. I think there are a lot of people that are anxious, at least, about pulling the trigger on something simply because they don't know what they don't know. And they're afraid that those unknowns are going to be too big of a problem for them to overcome.
Yeah, that's what held us back for probably 2-3 years from really jumping into it. And then I, you know, at some point you get so frustrated with what you're doing, you got to do something different. That's where we were. But you just let that fear of the unknown kind of wrestle with you and hold you back. And, you know, heck, we could have been 3 years ahead of where we are right now had we just jumped into it.
Sure.
You know, hindsight's 20/20.
Yeah, right. Always. It's always daunting to think about some of the things that are frightening. because you go, okay, but what if, but what if? And I think the reality is, yeah, but what if? What if you just pulled the trigger and you went at it? You could see what happens. And I think it's unique to be in a position where you are strained enough that you're like, I got to just pull the trigger, but you're paralyzed by the fear of making it happen. So let's talk, because obviously you're not the only person that goes through that. So let's talk about that wrestle a little bit, like internally navigating the break, keeping you from doing it, and the pain that made you push the gas to do it. Can you verbalize that in a way that,
I mean, for me, it was unique, and I kind of alluded to it. The company I was at, like I said, it was a good company. The position I was in, I was typically in a meeting 6 to 8 hours a day, every day, on top of my work. So I saw what I did, and then I saw my supervisors and their supervisors were in meetings even more than that on top of their work. And I was like, well, I don't want to do that. I don't want to move up in this company because I'm done with meetings. I've had too much meeting. So I got to do something different. And I had to pull the trigger. I had to do something. I didn't know what, but I needed to do something different. And I knew it for a couple of years. The tipping point for me was I was at my company and I'd been with a few related companies for several years. And then I was about to get my 5-year anniversary at the last company I was at before leaving. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. I was like, you got to be kidding me. I've spent 10 years of my life here and I don't like this. I can't spend another year here. I've got to go. And that was it. And from that point on, it was kind of that realization that I was treading water and I wasn't making the progress because I really didn't want to move up in that organization doing those things. But I couldn't tread water any longer. I needed to grow. I needed to progress. And I wasn't going to get what I needed there. And really from that point, I didn't have that fear. It just kind of melted away. And I said, I am doing this. And I think for somebody going out to do something on their own, you know, the two things I think that really it really helped us be successful was I didn't have a backup plan. So I had a young family, I had 3 kids and a wife and a mortgage and car payments. And
fear is a great motivator.
Yeah. We're going to make it. And that's our option. And if it doesn't work easily, we're going to do it hard and we're still going to get through it. And the other thing that I really took to heart when we started was all those setbacks that you invariably have, I really didn't let them get me down. I looked at them for what they were. I was learning. I got to learn a lesson. Sometimes they were expensive, sometimes not. Sometimes they hurt, sometimes they were embarrassing, but I was learning. And those first 3 years in business, I learned a ton and I never let it get me down. It was, okay, that didn't go the way I wanted. How could I have done it differently? What could I do better next time? And that's what we did. And we had some good wins along the way, but we always learn. And I think that's one of the things about our culture now, that we are a learning organization. We strive to learn all the time from all our interactions. And the guys who do the best with us are those who are willing to accept their role and learn from it and improve and realize that, you know, sometimes it doesn't go great. And sometimes, you know, we make mistakes and that's okay. The biggest thing is you're doing something, you're making progress. And if you screw up, you fix it and move on and don't dwell on it. But I think that really helped us.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. There's a couple of points there that I want to kind of key on for a second. The first one, our whole industry is made around mistakes or things not going like they were supposed to. Right. Because if everything went like it was supposed to, we would not have a career in the restoration space.
Exactly.
And I think it's important that people understand that especially as you're leading a team and kind of working them through some of that. So fear was the motivator to make sure that you were successful. But we didn't talk necessarily, or maybe I missed it, filling in the holes around, did you just quit and then go find a franchise? Or had you kind of said, I'm going to pull the trigger? Okay, so talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah, we planned it and we decided, my wife and I decided that we are going to go do something else. And then we started researching business opportunities, franchises, all kinds of different things. And when we landed on the franchise, we set a date for when we were going to start. And then I went to my employer and I said, look, I I have enjoyed working here. I respect you guys, but I'm going to go do my own thing. And, you know, I want to give you notice. And I gave them a full 30-day notice so that they had time to replace and backfill. And actually, they were great. They were really gracious. And after 30 days, they asked if I could stay on like one day a week just to kind of help transition the projects and things I was doing with whoever was taking over. So there was another about a month, I think, maybe 6 weeks, where I went in one day a week and I was just an hourly employee for them, but I helped them in that transition. So it made it smooth for them. And, you know, those first couple of months, you have no income. So it was nice to get, you know, a couple hours of paid something, you know, just so that, you know, I can pay for gas. This is great. Yeah. You know, we're not just living off savings. So I think I had a good relationship with the company I was at. They were good people. And, you know, they realized that there wasn't a way that I was not going to move forward with exiting, but I didn't want to leave them scrambling because, you know, I respected them and I appreciated all the opportunities they had given me up to that point. And I wanted to make sure they knew that I appreciated that. And I wanted it to be a good, smooth transition. And actually to this day, my restoration company does work for that company because of those relationships. And it's not a lot of business, but I think we handled that transition well. And it's been a really good client for us for, you know, 10 years.
Yeah. It's interesting because one of the things I typically ask is talking about the transition from what you were doing to what you became. What were some of the pitfalls in that transition?
I didn't really have any. I'm kind of a workaholic. So what I did the first probably 3 or 4 years in business was I worked. And any time I wasn't marketing my business or on a job, I was writing blogs. I was researching. I would stop and I'd say, okay, what is the most valuable thing I can do to grow our business right now? And that's what I would do. And I would just focus intently on what does our business need right now? And I would just do that. And I would say, you know, the con to that is that was the pitfall. You know, it was 100% all encompassing. This is what I am. This is what I do. It got our business going, you know, did some of my friendships and, you know, relationships outside of this business suffer? Sure. Cause I just didn't have the time to see those and cultivate those.
Sure.
But if during those, that kind of self-reflection, like what's the most important thing I can do? If it was, hey, go talk to so-and-so because they're important for your business, then that's what I did too. So it wasn't like I didn't have any outside interaction, but it, you know, I was very singularly focused for several years to get up and going.
Okay. And that's amazing, right? Like, I think it's important that everyone understands in terms of the entrepreneurship side of things, that's a lot of times what is required is putting your head down, going to work, grinding through it, figuring things out and trying to navigate what's the next step of the next thing I need to be doing to ensure the success of our business. And we talk about all the time in terms of, if you have a backup plan, the backup plan allows you to not have to do that. And you just very quickly quit because this is hard. Entrepreneurship is hard. Putting your head down and going to work and grinding through it and going, okay, I got to feed my family. What steps do I have to take to make sure that works? And then as you grow, now I've got to feed my family and her family and his family and their families. So you have to put your head down and grind and go through it. And it takes a load, right? It's a lot of stress. It requires a commitment from you to do that. And
for me, that's the best part.
Okay.
I love that. And I've thought about that, you know, we're stressed and we're freaking out. Like, what are we going to do? This client or that client or, you know, business up or down or whatever. When I think about the people who are relying on me and my decisions for their families and for their livelihood, that helps ground me. I don't know why, but that helps me just take a deep breath and say, okay, it's not about me. It's about them. And you know, I need to go back to work because that's what they need. And they rely on me for that. So that helps.
Fair. I think that's a valid point, right? And that drives a lot of us, honestly, on the entrepreneurship side is like, and sometimes it's the I want to help. And sometimes it's the stress of I've got to help, right? It's like they're dependent upon me and I've got to do this job well.
Yeah.
But it's still, in my mind, it's still heavy, right? That's still a load. Even if you enjoy trying to provide for them and playing the game of trying to get, figuring out what it is that's going to make it successful and work, mm-hmm. It still has somewhere. And I mean, I'm only 25. This is the wear and tear, wear and tear of. let's talk a little bit about like systems and processes, and you know how you've been successful. What kind of things? What's the singular best decision you've made to streamline your business?
That's a good question. We're always trying to streamline our business and be more efficient. And I think our success has come because I've always looked at it more. I've tried to look at it more long-term and what's the right thing to do for 10 years from now, not necessarily what's the right thing to do today. So if that means a new software, you know, we'll try it, but we're not beholden to the software just because that software is what we're using. Is it working? Is it helping us, you know, meet our mission, our core values? Is it helping us provide the level of service that I expect? And if it is, great, then we'll do it. And if not, then we start looking for other options. So I think we're always looking to streamline. I don't know that we've found anything that's perfect, but we found some good software. We found some bad software. And we're not afraid to move on. And I think that's probably true of a lot of restorers. There don't seem to be a lot of really good softwares out there specifically for us. Or if they are, they're really good at a fraction of your business. And then you've got to bolt, you know, 15 different things together. And that works too. I think that's always a constant battle. We haven't found that silver bullet yet, but we're always looking.
It's funny you say that. Obviously, I own a restoration company and a software company, and I'm like, well, yeah. I don't agree with you, but we can have that conversation later somewhere else. But in terms of, you know, it's difficult to look beyond the right now that I need, right? You said we're trying to look for the long term, which we all try to do, and kind of go, okay, what's 10 years from now look like? But right now, I have this need. And mm-hmm. sometimes it's difficult to go, okay, well, I need to fix this. How do I fix this right now and not be at the expense of 10 years from now? And so I agree with you. It's look long picture, look long term, and see if you can figure out exactly what's the most beneficial overall over the longevity of your company. But sometimes it's tough, man. And I get it. And it's, you know, how do you navigate some of those things? But in terms of other things, like, you know, we as a company, we use EOS, which is Entrepreneurial Operating System, which is just a tool to help us kind of get everybody on the same page and all that sort of stuff. And we're looking at a possible pivot on some things. But have you implemented anything like that as well to get all your people moving the same direction?
Yeah, we've implemented EOS. We've read that and implemented pieces of it. We work with some consultants, and they've helped us implement different processes out in the field for the technicians, or different job intake processes. I just don't think we've found the right thing just yet. We're still, from a software perspective, we haven't found it. And I don't know anything about yours, so I can't speak about that. Yeah. But the ones we've had have been good at certain things, and they haven't been good at other things, or they just don't do other things. Yeah. So,
and that's pretty always normative for that.
Yeah.
It's tough to build something for all people, for all situations, but we'll have that conversation. I mean, that's not the whole point, but the podcast is not about that necessarily. So we'll chat about that later separately.
That's fine.
Let's talk about one of the things you kind of brought up early, which is, you know, having your own thing gives you some freedoms where you are working 6-7 hour meetings per day, plus doing your work and just constantly at work. And this provides some level of freedom doing your own thing. Talk about that, how it's changed work-life balance. Cause you even said for the first 3 years, it's like, put my head down, go to work. Where are we at now?
Oh, I'm a workaholic.
Still today, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. That's what I do. I enjoy it. But the difference is I get that benefit. I get the reward, the value from the time that I put into work, because I see the fruits of it. I understand, you know, I can see the whole picture. And that's one of the things I think corporate America gets wrong so often, is they try to segment things so much that, well, you can't know how that really affects the company, because you might think, I don't know, you might think that's too much money for the company to make, or whatever it is. Sure. But they hide so much that employees are not really empowered to make the decisions that they want to make or that are right for the company, because they just don't know any better. And that's one of the things that I probably go a little too far. I may share too much with my employees, but we try to let them know what's going on. So they, you know, I firmly believe that most people are good and they want to do well. And if they know where the guardrails are, you know, this is the direction we want to go, they're by and large, they're going to try to get there with me. And that's how we've tried to do things. I don't think we're perfect at it, but that's, you know, that's kind of what we've done.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think by and large, people want to be helpful. I think they want to help you succeed and know that that also helps them get someplace better in life that they want to be as well. You know, there's some studies out and some stuff that we're studying right now that say, you know, like 20% of your employees are actively sabotaging you the entire time. It's like, okay, maybe so. Let's navigate that and see what that looks like. But by and large, our experience has been they want to be able to do something not completely selflessly, but they want to help you because they're trying to get to a better spot in life as well. And I think that's interesting. What is something that just completely blindsided you in business that you were like, man, I would have never seen that coming?
There's not been any big thing. We've had some customers who have really fooled us, and we've decided to take on projects that we never should have. And I think everybody does that. And that's actually one of the things we really try to train our newer project managers. Here are red flags. This is what to listen for. Ask these questions. If they get these answers, this is probably going to be a problem client and you should walk away. So the franchise really helped me early on when I had a couple of those. I remember my consultant saying, just screaming at me on the phone, don't go to that job. Don't you dare go. Don't even answer the phone if they call back. Don't go. And I was like, but it's a really big job. You're never going to get paid. Don't do it. And that helped. But that's probably been...
Did you listen?
I did. I did.
Good for you.
That was the advice I was given by a few other franchisees. They said, you bought into this because you don't know what you're doing. So when they tell you to do something, just do it. And that's what I did. So I was a simple-minded, I do what they tell me to do, and it worked. And it was very good for quite a while. But as far as being blindsided, we haven't had any huge, huge things that blindsided us. The value of relationships was very surprising to me because I never really understood that in running a business, how valuable the relationship that you have and who else they know and how they can help you. I didn't understand that. And that, I would say, if anything blindsided me, that was probably the biggest thing was, oh my gosh, there's so many people that want to help. You just need to get to know them and see how you can help them, and they'll help you. And it can be a really wonderful relationship.
Yeah, that's fair. We lean heavily on relationships for the growth of our business, just because that's where the majority of our work comes from, is referral and relationship based. I mean, there's obviously digital and some of that stuff, but it's, relationships are significant. And yes, you're correct. I think everyone in the service industry, period, especially when you start out, thinks that it doesn't matter what the job is. If it's money that's supposed to be coming in the door, I'm going to take that job. And then you learn very quickly that you did that job and you still aren't going to get paid for that job. And now you've just spent time doing something you shouldn't have been doing, spending money you shouldn't have been spending, and now you're not going to get it collected. There's that happens, and I think it's all of us. Those that say, no, I've never done that, most of them are liars. They're lying.
Or they haven't opened a business yet.
That's correct. You know, another thing that we say pretty regularly around here is no good deed goes unpunished.
True.
Because you try to help, something's going to happen, and it's going to burn you. Which is unfortunate, but the way we're wired, we keep doing things to try to help because that's what we're supposed to be doing.
That's a good point. That is one thing that blindsided me was the no good deed. And what we started doing was not in a real obvious way, but when we helped people with something or, you know, we did a little extra, we would just point it out just to say, hey, I'm not charging for this, but I just want you to know this was an issue. We took care of it while we're here. And that has helped us a lot because when we had issues after the fact and then we would say, well, we did this and this and this for free, customer didn't care. But if we pointed it out before it became an issue, I think that has helped smooth out some relationships and prevented some of those things.
Yeah, that's probably a great way to, like, that's a note for everybody to make in regard to that. If you're doing something that's not technically what you're getting paid for, do it because it's the right thing to do. At the same time, make sure you let them know, like, hey, just point it out. Not in a braggadocious kind of way or any of that stuff, but just to make sure they understand, hey, I'm trying to go above and beyond to serve you here. And I think doing that up front, probably very valid, Ben, is a way that you can navigate some of those things that would bite you later. I think that's a great point.
That's helped us a lot.
You talked a little bit about the broke side of, you know, jumping into this and not having any money coming in. And a lot of service industry guys, when they first get started, they don't have any money. They don't have any money. And then they hit this big project and they have a lot of money for a little bit. And they just kind of go crazy with that money that they have. Talk about experiences that way and your thoughts.
Well, we almost went that path because we were humming along our first 6 months in business, and things started to pick up in our 6 month quite a bit. And we actually got our three largest projects all at the same time, right then and there. And we wildly undercharged a fraction of what we should have done. But we did those jobs, and they were good projects. We were profitable. Customers were thrilled. The client was happy. The referrer was happy. Everybody was happy. It was excellent. But that was the first time we actually made money. And we actually took some bad advice on that one. And we gave a huge bonus to one of our employees. And then after the fact, the consultant called me back and said, "Hey, just, I want to make sure you understood what I meant by that. I didn't mean, you know, it all goes to the one person. That's for everybody." And we were like, "It's too late. I've already talked to him, and I already given him the check, and we're back to square one." So we spent a good chunk of money on some bonuses on that first job, but I think it was worth it. I mean, he was tickled, you know, and at the time it was me and him and my wife were the employees. So he got a really nice bonus, and, you know, it was a good Christmas for him.
Yeah, we're good. Good. So I told you earlier, I wanted to try to stay at that 35 minute mark to honor your time. So we're cresting up on that right now. Are there thoughts that you would say, this is something I think everyone that's going to consider the entrepreneurship journey should know, and pitfalls that you would want to help somebody avoid? What are a couple things that you would want to share with someone?
For me, I knew I wouldn't be able to do this on my own. I needed somebody to, you know, in my case, it was my wife. She manages our books, our HR, payroll, all the back office stuff. I knew that was not going to be my strength. I don't have the patience for it.
Sure.
So knowing your blind spots is critical. I'm not saying you have to have a partner that does those, but you got to know what you're not going to be able to do, so that you can find someone to fill those gaps. Because everybody's got gaps. What you don't want to do is spend your time just spinning your wheels in your gaps and not thriving where you're good.
Absolutely right. Very well said. That's a conversation that pops up all the time, where it's like, listen, if you spend all the time, what you just called, in your gaps, spinning your wheels in the gaps, you're doing the things that you're not really good at, that you don't enjoy, that you're not going to be successful at, but they're just mundane things that have to be done. Then if you're spectacular at business development and being in the community and building relationships are going to lead to revenue, you're not doing that because you're spending all the time spinning your wheels in the gaps, which is what Ben's saying right here. And I think it's important for you to hear that in a manner that helps you understand, okay, wait, I need to figure out ways to delegate some of the things or pass off some of the things that have to be done that I'm not good at. Even if it's, in some cases, there are ways for you to get a virtual assistant somewhere that you're paying a minimal amount of money in another part of the world to help navigate some of these things. Maybe you can do some of it with an AI assistant at this point in today's world, but then you can focus on the things that really make you successful and help you grow. And then the stuff that you enjoy and you're good at. I think that's great. Very well said. I think that's vital. Ben, I mean, I appreciate the time. I appreciate you being on here and sure, spending, you know, a good half an hour with us to chat about your journey. And I learned a lot, and I think it's unique that there's some good nuggets we're going to pull out of this. And I appreciate you being on.
All right. Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it, Clint.
Absolutely. Take care, Ben. We'll talk.
All right. See you.